And I see so many organizations, especially sales organizations, fail in this one piece. They will talk about clarity of message, and they will tell people, this is what we want to achieve, this is what we want to do, but then they will reward the opposite behavior. And I think this is one thing that is a huge trust breaker for most organizations, and they don't realize it, is that when you say you're gonna do something, you also reward the right behavior for that.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Keep Moving Forward, the podcast from X-Team for tech professionals who are passionate about growth, leadership, and innovation. I'm your host, Gemma Versace, Chief Client Officer at X-Team. In every episode, we sit down with leaders who are redefining how technology teams work, grow, and lead. People who understand that performance begins with connection. Today's conversation is for leaders navigating constant change. Right now, expectations are rising across every organization. Leaders are being asked to adopt new technology, deliver stronger results, and move faster every quarter. At the same time, many teams are feeling the weight of non-stop transformation and unclear priorities. My guest today is Paul Gentile, a pre-sales engineering and architecture leader. He's worked as Senior Director of Pre-Sales Engineering and Architecture at Broadcom. And he's also the author of the book Revolutionary Revenue, AI for Sales, where he explores how AI is reshaping sales leadership and why people, process, and technology must evolve together for adoption to truly stick. Paul has spent years leading distributed technical teams through rapid product launches, strategic shifts, and large-scale AI adoption inside complex enterprise environments. In our conversation, Paul explains why AI is not just a technology initiative. It is a leadership and enablement challenge. He shares how clear guardrails can create speed instead of friction, how to recognize change fatigue before performance drops, and why trust is the foundation of high-performing teams. If you're trying to raise the bar while protecting your team's energy, this episode is for you. Let's get started. Hi, Paul, and welcome to Keep Moving Forward. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Gemma. I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Me too. And a good place to always start is to tell me a little bit about your background and your role at Broadcom.
Sure. So I was leading the partner technology organization, kind of the intersection between sales and architecture for our partners. And I ended up there because I was at VMware previously for about almost 12 years. And of course, Broadcom acquired VMware. And most recently, I've exited there to focus on this, do my own thing.
Amazing. Talking about going off and doing your own thing, you are an author of the book Revolutionary Revenue, which as soon as we are finished today, I'm keen to go out and purchase a copy and learn all the wonderful insights and things that you've said there. But in your book, Revolutionary Revenue, you've said AI works when people, process, and leadership grow together. Where do you most often see leaders get that balance wrong?
Sure. Well, thank you. Yeah. And in fact, actually, yes, that's the book. So for those wondering.
Excellent.
You know, I think it's just like any technology. Everyone starts with the tool, the technology. And really, you have to start with the outcome. What are we trying to do? And then who are the people that are going to get us there? And then lastly, you know, is the how we're going to do it. And that's where technology comes in, because you could have, you know, if I wanted to dig a hole, right, and I start with a shovel, and then I find out, well, really, I needed a backhoe. Okay, well, I've got the wrong tool. Then you find out, well, gee, I need somebody to operate the backhoe, right? Oh, and by the way, this hole is going to be so deep that it needs bracing and shoring and, you know, and there's other things. So, you know, but in technology, we always start backwards. We don't architect, you know, the outcome we want. We forget about the people. And that's really where I see leaders get it wrong. And that's what I was trying to do in the book, was put all those in context, that if you start with where you want to end up, then you can find the people to get you there. And then you can work with the tools and the technology to make it possible.
Yeah, I love that as a concept because you're exactly right. I think people, they find a tool or they get told by people what tools to use. And then it's a case of saying to the people, here's the square, fit in it, rather than, you know, how do we build the square? And to your point, what skills are necessary and what people are necessary to be able to help us build that? So I love that. I love that focus on, you know, very much a people first and then go and looking at what outcomes they can be delivering as well. You've led teams through nonstop change with at places like VMware. How do you personally recognize when a team is approaching change fatigue before performance drops? Because as leaders, we are often always trying to make sure that we are consistently trying to, you know, do things different rather than looking at it and saying, how do we do it better? And because of that, there are so many times that, you know, leaders come to their teams and say, as now this is something new or this is something different. And change fatigue is a real thing across workforce. How do you make sure that you are aware of that and that you can address that before there's any noticeable performance drop?
Sure. That's a really good question because it's real in all size businesses, right? If you're a small business today, you know, change is dictated by the marketplace, right? What you're trying to do and achieve and your marketplace keeps shifting. If you're in a large enterprise or, you know, a large company, right? Change, you know, I say there's probably maybe a 2-year stability window in any type of business, but that's probably even today would be a long window because, right, leaders change, priorities change, the marketplace changes. And when you have a team, especially a high performing team, they could be very sensitive to that, right? Because these are, you know, in the high tech world, they're very smart people. They're good problem solvers, but they don't always have, you know, the ability to adjust really fast. So I think first, as a leader, you have to recognize that change is the constant. Two, you have to know each of your people. Where are their strengths? You know, where are their challenges, right? And as the leader, it's the responsibility to make sure they can do what they're good at doing, right? And that you have the systems to enable them to do that. But, you know, usually what I see, you know, some leaders will look and say, well, you know, we're going to measure the metrics. A lot of these people will continue to perform even though they feel like they're being crushed by all these changes. So it's not a metric thing. It's really more about tone. And it's sometimes it's more guttural, it's more feel. So one, I think constant communication, right? You know, making sure that there's clarity of message in both ways, right? We're not just dictating to the team what they need to achieve, but we're also hearing back that it's the same. And in fact, you know, any of us who've worked in large, you know, corporations or have worked with customers who are large corporations and large enterprises, you can quickly see how fast an organization can get disconnected. You can talk to frontline people, whether they're in IT or marketing or wherever. And by the time you get up 2 or 3 levels, there's just a disconnect of what that message is. So that also insulates the change and that crush that sometimes these frontline people and these teams can feel. So I think the first thing really is, one, focus on the people, understand, you know, who they are, what drives them, and then look for changes in how they're interacting, right? Or, the, you know, and the communication coming back from them. I think that's some of the keys to handling that type of constant change.
I love what you just said there too about, you know, being such an authentic leader and being able to kind of lead with your gut and be able to, if you're having an interaction with one of your team members and you're picking up something or that they are letting you know exactly how they're feeling, to actually be able to take a pause and digest it and say, is this something that we need to respond to that could potentially change for either that individual or, you know, have the potential to be really impactful across the whole team. I, you know, it's such a wonderful thing that saying that, because I think a lot of leaders, as you said, is that instead of just kind of mandating and saying, this is what we will do and being very top down, to be able to have that collaboration and engagement with your teams to really understand what's driving them and what their thoughts and feelings are. It's such a collaborative way of thinking. And I love that. You mentioned enterprise environments, whether it be the business that you're currently working in or your clients. In those environments, in enterprise environments, leaders often default to control things when things start to feel really complex. How have you learned to use guardrails instead of mandates?
Lots of prayers, lots of Renoke. I think first it's trust. You have to trust in the people you're working with. So you need to hire people and, you know, find people that, you know, have a shared value base, right? That's one. But two, I think you also have to trust in the systems you put in place, right? I think the reason we move to, a lot of times as leaders, a command and controls type structure is because it's easier for us, right? It takes away that anxiety. It really can put in place what we believe is, you know, a better way to execute. The reality is then it's putting on us as the leader, we have to think of everything. Right? We have to be the one who thinks of every scenario, every situation. But when you have the right people and you have the right systems, and then you have clarity of message, now you could say, here's the objective. Are we getting to the objective? Not, you know, at any cost, of course, but right, those are non-negotiable. So if our objective is, you know, we want to go out and we want to bring, I don't know, let's just say we want to solve this problem in the world, right? You know, let's say it's a medical problem. We want to solve cancer, right? If I'm the leader of that organization and I've got to think of every way to solve cancer, it's going to be really short. I know I'm not that smart, right? But if I can hire people who also all agree that this is the objective we've signed on for, right? We've got clarity of mission, right? Clarity of message. And we also have our non-negotiables. We're not going to do it in a way that, say, hurts people or, right, or, you know, is, you know, not ethical, right? So those are those things. And I think those are all our systems, right? The message drives, you know, everything else, but the systems drive what we can do. So as the leader, it's really just about setting the objectives and having that clarity of mission, right, which is our message. You know, I've seen it over and over. I think, you know, I'm sure you have. We can see it everywhere. You know, and there's so many adages or things that, you know, the tighter you grip, you know, the more control you lose, right? All these types of things. And I think they've been around forever because it's the truth, right? The more you try and control things, the less control you actually have.
You've built distributed teams across regions and time zones with, you know, with your career today. What do you initially, what did you, I should say, initially underestimate about leading teams that you don't physically see every day? Because there's different cultures, there's different attitudes, there's different time zones. You know, if you had a wonderful crystal ball that if you could go back in time, what are some of the things that you did underestimate about not being able to be eyeballing in person your teams, you know, every single day to help keep them on track?
Sure. That's actually, it's what you just said, is seeing them in person. I think as humans, right, we crave connection. And, you know, I'm just as guilty as kind of what I said in my very first answer, that you think the tool or technology can replace that. And, you know, as much as Zoom and, you know, WebEx and all these tools we've had over the years, right, can connect us with our voice and with images, I just think that simple act of, you know, meeting somebody in person, right, you know, sharing a smile, sharing, you know, a coffee or a drink of water, or just a conversation to understand who they are, right, is so much more valuable. And we could do some of that, you know, via technology, but the actual presence of being with them, right? I think we definitely have something in our being that says we want to feel connected. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge when you run, you know, multinational, you know, teams. And again, I don't think it could ever be perfect. You know, it's hard to get from, you know, say New Jersey to Tokyo on a whim or to London. But I think you do it by planning and making time for them, just like you would for family. You know, I like analogies, and my wife obviously is in the, if you don't know, she's a chef and has a restaurant. We work together as well. And, you know, we came from the restaurant business, and in the restaurant business, they call it family, right? We always talk about family meal, right? And they call it a house. And I think more businesses should think like that, right? We should think about business being more about family, not it's business, not personal. No, it is personal. These are people. And that's the, you know, no matter where they are in the world, right? They have the same thoughts and feelings about work and life and family, you know, and they want to feel safe and secure. And they also want to feel noticed. They want to feel heard. So I think creating that for everybody is one of the big keys to a successful team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you say there, because, you know, it is that whole, you know, it's business, nothing personal, but it's humans that we're dealing with. I mean, obviously with the emergence of AI and, you know, AI agents, that's a little bit different. But right now, the majority of our teams are humans with feelings that we need to support and look after and be really conscious of. One of the things that you just said there that I thought was really interesting is, you know, when you do have people that are on site every day, you are able to celebrate those small wins, because you can overhear a conversation that they had that they might have, you know, turned around a potential lost sale, or there might have been an irate customer that you can hear started off really horribly, and then they've done all of the wonderful things to be able to make sure that they can maintain that customer, because you were actually there to physically hear it and see them work through and deliver the success. Talking about AI and new AI platforms and tools that are out there, when organizations roll out AI tools or any new platform, what do you see as the earliest signal that adoption is going to fail, whether it be that you're not getting the buy-in from the team, or that there's not an understanding as to, you know, the benefits or the value that the AI tool or the new platform is going to deliver? What has your experience been that has made a light bulb go off in you to say, hey, we're kind of gone off the tracks here? And how do you get back on the tracks?
By the way, I always preface this by saying, you know, anything about AI is also about any technology and any type of transformation, right? This is really just a new transformation, right? This is the AI transformation. But I would say the number one indicator is shadow systems. You know, I think people are very good at, you know, they want to perform. They want to do their best in their role, right? For their team, for their company, you know, for themselves, right? And anything that kind of impedes that, or they don't see as valuable, they will quickly go around. You know, I think of, you know, the years ago, there was a meme, right? I think before we called it memes, with the, you know, with the tire swing. And right, it's like, you know, what the customer wanted, you know, what the architect designed, what engineering built, and what was delivered. And it was completely, you know, it's 4 pounds, it's completely different. And that happens all too often with AI today. You know, candidly, most of the AI, you know, I try a lot of different AI platforms all the time. And I'm talking beyond, you know, when you start getting away from like the open AIs and the Anthropics, you know, to these other ones who kind of get into the specialty. And the number one thing I find most of them are really good at doing is getting your credit card, you know, and they're really good at upfront at saying what they're going to do. And then once you get into them, they're really not delivering. And I think that's true even in enterprise AI projects, right? I think there's a big promise to the executives. There's, you know, and that's what they want. And then what gets delivered and implemented ends up being slightly different or completely different. And so the users all of a sudden realize, like, wow, we need to have some other shadow systems. And most companies have so much shadow systems, they don't even realize it. I mean, think about how many billions of dollars of software platforms that have been sold, but yet major companies still run on just simple spreadsheets and email and, you know, and documents that get passed around and printed out. I won't say where, but there's somebody I know for a lot of years, we used to work together, and they work at another organization today, that they don't even send email. They literally still print out memos and put them on people's desks. And I'm like, wow. So, you know, it's not an AI thing. I think it's the reality that people are human. And if people don't see value in something, or they don't understand it, I really think that's the real issue. They don't understand what the people who implemented didn't understand the real reason it was needed. And the people who are using it don't really understand what it's going to give them. And maybe it's really not giving them what they need. So you see shadow systems pop up everywhere. You know, it's something we've tried to solve for years, but it still happens.
It's a really interesting take on it. And the phrase that comes to mind is, you know, all the gear, but no idea, because people, they've got it available to them, but they don't get the cut through. It doesn't resonate exactly how they're going to be able to benefit from it or how they should be interacting with it to be able to really drive that value. So yeah, it's a really interesting take. To pivot a little bit now, you talk a lot about trust as a prerequisite for performance. What are the small everyday leadership behaviors that actually build trust? You talked a little bit about before around, you know, being able to call out the successes so your teams can trust that you're aware of what they're delivering and they can trust that you're looking at how they're behaving and they can trust that you have an awareness as to, you know, the good things that they're delivering. But what are the everyday leadership behaviors that leaders listening to the podcast can take on and start to incorporate into their everyday interactions with their teams?
It's one of those things that I think is so important in a team. You know, another way to discuss trust or define it, I call a safe space, right? The team really needs to feel that when they show up with their authentic self, whether they're agreeing with what's going on or questioning it or executing on it, that they're in a space that they can trust, right? That, you know, and I think how you get there, it's not big, gregarious things. It's the small things every day, right? You know, it's one, letting them know that, you know, as a leader, you're fallible as well, right? I think, you know, I'm not perfect, you know, and I think it's also about, we said, clarity of mission or message, but it's also clarity of roles, right? Sometimes, you know, because how people have come up through their career, maybe I'm different, maybe I look at this differently, right? But people will want to take and put, you know, all that, you know, onto the leader, right? Oh, you're responsible for everything I do. Just tell me what to do, right? And I think that strips away trust, right? Because what they can say next is, well, it was wrong, so it's your fault, right? And so they automatically start without trusting. So it takes a lot of little steps. One, getting to know them, who they really are. You know, again, showing up every day with the small things. Like I said, clarity of message. And it's got to be consistent. And I think consistency is another. That you're always the same. You're not like, you know, when the business is good, you're not one type of leader. And then when it's bad, you're another type of leader, right? You're the, you know, you're going to freak out. But I think the other piece of it too is, and I see so many organizations, especially sales organizations, fail in this one piece. They will talk about clarity of message and they will tell people, this is what we want to achieve. This is what we want to do. But then they will reward the opposite behavior. And I think this is one thing that is a huge trust breaker for most organizations, and they don't realize it, is that when you say you're going to do something, you also reward the right behavior for that. And the great example I'll use in sales that happens almost all the time across so many organizations, they will say, we want to be a value selling organization. We want to go out and talk about our customers' outcomes and deliver on those outcomes. But then when it comes to rewarding how sales actually happen, they only care about the number. So where do people gravitate? They gravitate towards the number. So you've broken trust there because you have to say one thing, but you're actually doing the other. So I think that's another key, right? Is doing what you say and saying what you do. I think some of these things really aren't complicated. We probably learn most of them in kindergarten, but for some reason we think that once we're sophisticated in business, like, oh, that's not really how the world works. No, it is how it works. We just don't want to admit it. I think I may be a little hard on that.
So. No, I love it. It's really refreshing to hear because, you know, as you've said, there's so many different theories out there. There's so many different, you know, sexy new leadership ideas that people think, oh, this is how we have to be interacting with our team, that, you know, most leaders do feel awkward and clunky doing it. But because they're getting told this is the new way of leadership, a lot of what you have shared today, which I think is absolutely brilliant, is also just kind of stripping back all of that. And you said it a little while ago, like just lead with your gut, be true to yourself, be making sure that, you know, you say as you do and do what you say, as well as bring things back to basics. That it's a really good point that you say that, you know, from a sales perspective and in client success teams, that leaders are about, you know, how do we create the value to clients? How do we create that stickiness? How do we, you know, how do we make sure that the clients love us and continue to work with us? But, you know, that all goes out the window if somebody's doing that, but it might take a year to get that sale versus someone who goes out and gets a sale immediately. And that's where all the praise and attention goes. I love the idea that you're saying it's all the small things that build a really strong foundation that allows your team to be the main characters and go out and shine because they're able to grow in that safe space. I think that's amazing. In the roles that that you have looked after within from a sales perspective, in pre-sales and architecture roles, teams sit at an intersection of pressure and possibility. What's the difference between healthy pressure and destructive pressure? Because you've mentioned a couple of times here that, you know, it's not about mandates. You want a safe space. There needs to be collaboration, but also leaders do need to deliver and there's pressure on them. How do leaders make sure that when they are sending the message down or making sure that their teams are delivering, that it's not destructive pressure, that you stay in the healthy pressure zone?
It's a fine line, right? And I think every organization culturally is obviously different, but also that fine line, I think, moves. You know, if we look at it from the big picture, you know, let's say, you know, a sports team, the pressure of being in the finals or the Super Bowl or, you know, the World Series, right, puts a lot of pressure on the team and everybody on that team to perform. And that's a very positive pressure, right? Because they all kind of focus, you know, and I would say this, if the pressure helps everyone focus on a clear objective, that's a good thing. The opposite would be, you know, let's say a coach or a team manager who, you know, is just coming up with, you know, what the team would perceive as, say, random or hurtful, you know, culture or metrics or measurements, right? And they just don't want to show up and play, right? They're kind of like demotivated, right? That's the other end of the spectrum, right? So they've got a pressure because, you know, they got a paycheck and they've got to be there, but they don't really want to. Right. So I think those are the ends of the spectrum. Where it kind of happens in the middle, especially in business, can be a challenge because you do need people to perform. Just because it's a safe space doesn't mean that, you know, you can't perform. What the safe space allows is everybody to have their own thoughts, their own opinions, their own self in the achievement of that single goal. You know, years ago, I'm sure we've all done it, you know, whether it's in, you know, what you've done in school or through, you know, training, whatever, you know, talk about the four stages of team development, right? Forming, storming, norming, and performing, right? You know, it's not a new concept, but I think throughout there, that's where you can see where pressure gets applied, right? When a new team comes together, everybody's got their own idea of what the objective is, of what the mission is. But what overcomes that is all, it's kind of like the honeymoon period. It's just that elation, that joy of being together, right? You know, there's an emotional feel. So nobody really notices it. And then all of a sudden you kind of hit that wall and that's the storming phase. That's when you realize we're not all aligned. We don't all really have the same mission in mind. We all, you know, maybe I believe if this was a basketball team, right, I believe I'm the superstar, right? No, the real goal is we want to win the championship at the end of the year. Not you being the star. So now we're storming, right? We've finally realized we're not really on the same page here. And then you start to get to normalize. You start to come through. And this is where pressure, I think, is really important because you step in and you help your team to clarify what the mission is, right? Each one of them is going to have to individually overcome whatever has kept them from, you know, focusing on that mission. And you start to normalize. And that's when you get to performance in that step four. So I think, how do you recognize it? The first thing is, you know, are we moving the mission forward, right? Or like I said, are we playing in the World Series or the playoffs, right? Is that the type of pressure that we're under? Or is this an artificial pressure because, you know, everybody is kind of in disarray and we're just going to push down more metrics on them. We're going to push more activity on them. We're going to push more results we want from them. And you can usually tell really fast. I think, you know, that's again, goes back to what we talked about, getting to know your people and who they are and how they, you know, perform, they'll tell you really fast, especially if you create that safe space. Now, if they're not telling you, that's another key indicator. So if you're a manager and you think everything's great, there's a problem because it's never always great. So.
Love how, you know, as you said, it's pressure is something that is you need to work through, but you can also harness it. And all of those great, ideas and strategies that you've just talked through, you know, for leaders listening, I think is some really sage advice. I could talk to you all day, Paul, but this is the last question. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So, you know, for those people listening, as you think about the leaders who are listening to the podcast, who are looking for different ideas, who are looking for advice, who are looking for strategies from somebody like you who has worked across small, medium and large enterprises, who have led, you know, large distributed teams, who are navigating constant change that, you know, you've been through and that what you've delivered successfully. What's one belief or habit that has helped you keep moving forward when things are difficult?
You have to believe it's possible. If anybody else on earth can do something, so can you, right? And two, don't take yourself so seriously. Don't be so stuck that, you know, your thoughts are correct. And I say that because most of the time our thoughts are around how we can't do stuff. So don't believe that, you know, you're the expert on not doing stuff, because you're not. It's just your brain trying to trick you and protect you. So, you know, believe it is possible and don't believe it's not possible. Don't take yourself so seriously on that.
That is just such a fabulous way to wrap up, I think, the feeling of this whole discussion and podcast today as well, is that the people listening today could walk away with a really large amount of fantastic ideas and advice that's going to help them create a really amazing foundation for, you know, repeatable processes. And I just think it's been so refreshing to hear from you today with your honesty and transparency around, you know, how you've been successful, but some really fantastic foundations for the people listening today. So thank you so much again, Paul. Thanks for joining Keep Moving Forward.
Gemma, thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's an absolute joy of a conversation. Thank you.
My conversation with Paul reinforced something we see every day at X-Team. High performance does not come from pressure alone. It comes from clarity. It comes from trust. And it comes from leaders who build systems where people can experiment safely, take ownership, and grow together. What stood out most was Paul's focus on guardrails instead of mandates. When expectations are clear and teams feel supported, they move faster. Adoption improves. Ownership increases. Performance becomes sustainable instead of reactive. In distributed environments, trust and communication are not optional. They are foundational. When leaders actively manage change fatigue instead of ignoring it, they both protect results and people. Join us next time for more conversations with technology leaders who inspire us to grow, lead, and innovate. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube Music. And if this episode resonated with you, please share it with your network. Until next time.